Nights tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Livonier, in this hour, comedy later on from the Bob Hope Show from 1945. But first, a broadcast of Fibber McGee and Molly, an NBC episode from June 19th, 1945.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Makers of Johnson Wax products for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. Do you know about Johnson's Cream Wax and what it will do for your light-colored furniture and woodwork and for your white refrigerator and kitchen things? One reason the people at 79 Westville Vista have been happily married for so long is that everything's always been on a give-and-take basis. Like right now at the breakfast table. He takes the news section of the paper and gives her the want ads. As we meet, Fibber McGee and Molly.
Anything interesting in the want ads, Molly?
Nothing but this item here.
What's that?
Says wanted. Summer boarders in large country home by refined woman with glass tin veranda and air conditioning.
She probably works for Ripley all winter. Hey, did old man Carstairs call me this morning?
You mean the Mr. Carstairs?
Yep.
The one that's chairman of more boards than you'd need to build a fence around South Dakota?
Yep.
The millionaire, Mr. Carstairs?
Yep.
Mrs. Carstairs' husband?
Sure.
What on earth would he be calling you for?
Oh. I and he have got a little deal on.
Oh, tell Mommy all about it, dearie.
No, I can't. I can't tell about it, not till the deal is consummated. You know, I think it'd be a great thing for Carstairs if he tied up with a guy like me.
You do?
Somebody intelligent, dynamic, a go-getter.
Oh, dear.
Somebody he could come to any hour of the day or afternoon and say, look, McGee, do you think we ought to amortize the common stock or reduce the fiscal debentures on the preferred? At par?
And what would you say?
I'd laugh in his face. Then I'd send him out to play golf, and as soon as he was gone, I'd grab a dictionary and see what the Sam Hill debenture is.
My, isn't big business fascinating,
yeah,
though? I can just see you in a big oak paneled office in Wall Street, frowning at the ticker tape and wondering if you'd ever understand it.
I'd have been a big man in communications today if I hadn't run into union trouble.
Labor?
Western. They said they couldn't use me without I had a bicycle. They said I could cover more ground with a bicycle, and then they looked at my feet and said, well, a little more, anyway. And I says, oh, is that so?
Hello, Mr. McGee. Hello, Mrs. McGee.
Oh, hello, Alice. Will you have a cup of coffee?
Oh, no, thank you. I'm going out to take a sun bath, and if I drink coffee, I get so wide awake the sun hurts my eyes.
Oh. I heard you answering the phone a couple of times this morning, Alice. Any of them for me?
Yes, but they had the wrong Mr. McGee.
Oh.
Couldn't have been for you because it was Mr. Carstairs' secretary calling, and he's a big millionaire.
Whoop.
I told him not to be silly and hung up on him.
Oh, my goodness, Alice, it was for Mr. McGee.
Oh, creepers, Mr. McGee, I'm terribly sorry. But how did I know that a millionaire like Mr. Carstairs would have anything to do with a little, an unimportant,
Forget it, kid. He'll call again. After all, when you've got a better mousetrap, every big cheese wants to get into it.
Himself here has got a big deal on with Mr. Carstairs, haven't you, dearie?
Oh, it's not so much this time. But it may be the beginning of a very profitable association. I'll have to admit, Carstairs has got a talent for business.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
They say everything he touches turns to gold.
Betcha.
He patted me on the head once when I was a little girl, and now look at me. I'm a blonde.
I do hope you'll tell Mr. Carstairs about your plan for stabilizing the currency, McGee.
Gee, have you got a plan for that too, Mr. McGee?
Oh, sure. You see, Alice, my child, the American dollar is worth different amounts in different places.
Oh?
I'd fix it so it'd be worth $1.15 all over the world. Sure. Sure, and the 15 cents would take care of taxes, leaving everybody a buck clear. Yeah, is that simple or is that simple?
Oh, gee, that's a wonderful idea, Mr. McGee.
Oh, I tell you, Alice, he's full of them. He had one to base our currency on lead instead of gold, too.
Sure. Sure, then any time the country got in trouble, Washington would simply have to get the lead out. But that's for the future. I don't know.
You must have been a whiz at school, Mr. McGee.
He wouldn't study, Alice. He was a very unruly boy.
That there is a falsehood. I was the ruliest kid in school, and you know it. I'd have led my class in math if it hadn't been for my music teacher.
Miss Fiditch, huh? Mm-hmm.
Well, now, how did your music teacher keep you from getting good grades in math?
Well, I happened to be passing a cloakroom one day, and I saw Miss Fiditch kissing the math profs.
Imagine it.
Oh.
Yeah, there they were, mushing like a dog sled from Fairbanks. The math prof was telling the music teacher how he loved her to 14 decimals.
Yes.
And the music teacher was playing Ravel's Bolero on the back of his neck. And I caught him. I caught him colder than a well digger's boots. And they knew I'd seen him.
So you decided on a little blackmail.
Oh, huh? I wouldn't say that. I just slacked off in my homework, see? No use knocking myself out when I was a cinch to pass anyway.
So you kept their little secret and they passed you with high grades.
Well, no. 2 days before graduation, they told me they'd been married for 3 years and slapped me with a D-.
Which goes to show you, Alice, it isn't the math that gets you. It's the aftermath. Always remember that.
Yeah, and see where it gets you. Hey, Molly, did an old man Carstairs call again?
No, dearie. What'll I tell him if he does?
You tell him you're my secretary and you'll see if I'm in.
Yeah?
Then when you get me, his secretary will keep you waiting a while. And then when you get Carstairs on the phone, I'll keep him waiting. That's the way us big businessmen impress each other with how busy we are, see?
And nobody wins but the telephone company.
Yeah, huh? Well, with a big deal like I and Carstairs have got on, you can't rush to the phone like a couple of schoolgirls fixing up a taffy pull. You got to get some dignity into the thing so that... Oh, there's Carstairs. Now grab the phone and make me hard to get, baby.
I'll tell him you had to fly to England for a conference with Churchill.
Yeah.
But you'll be back in 15 or 20 minutes,
yeah.
Huh?
Tell him that. Tell him anything. Just make me important, that's all. He's going to...
Oh, my goodness, I don't know what to say, McGee.
Oh, I got it. Here, give me the phone. I'll give him a busy signal. Biz, 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 biz. That did it. His secretary hung up like she'd been bit by a mongander.
By a what?
Mongander, that's a male mongoose. It's a very painful bite. I had one once that bit...
That's probably the phone company wanting to know who's playing horse with their busy signal.
That's maybe Carstairs himself. Hand me the financial section of the paper. Thanks.
Come in.
U.S. Steel closed at 4 p.m. Not much activity with industrial...
Hello there, Mrs. Carstairs. Do come in.
How do you do, my dear?
Oh, good day, Mrs. Carstairs. Excuse my absent-mindedness. Just running over a few stock market quotations.
Really? Are you a bear or a bull, Mr. McGee?
He's an elk, Mrs. Carstairs.
I just dabble a bit in the market, Carsty. A few thousand shares here, a few thousand shares there. I buy in at the peak and wait for a drop. Silly, of course, but I find it rather amusing.
Do you have a seat on the exchange, Mr. McGee?
No, but those blue serge pants he's wearing are Bob Dew for an exchange on the seat.
I'm afraid my wife is not very familiar with financial expressions, Carsty. She thinks the Corn Exchange is a club for radio comedians.
So do I.
Well, how is Mr. Carstairs these days?
Mr. Carstairs is quite well, my dear, thank you. He has learned how to relax, you know, with his hobby.
Oh, what is his hobby, Mrs. Carstairs?
Collecting.
Collecting what?
Money.
Well, yes, I can see how that might be quite fascinating. Tell me, Mrs. Carstairs, are you going out of town for the summer?
Oh, yes, my dear. I usually try to spend a few months away from the bustle and turmoil.
You may get away from your turmoil, Carsty, but
McGee!
With that...
Okay.
Where do you usually go for the summer, Mrs. Carstairs?
Oh, we have a little cottage at the seashore, Mrs. McGee. Nothing elaborate, 19 rooms or so. We hope to add onto it when conditions permit.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. 19 rooms at the seashore, that's just Tobacco Road with water wings. Well, don't be surprised if we drop in on you for a few weeks this summer, Carstairs.
Oh, now, McGee, we don't even know where it is.
I'll find it, don't worry.
I'm sure you would, Mr. McGee. It's just a stone's throw from the railroad, and I might say we keep a large supply of stones in the back of the station wagon. Well, good day, Mrs. McGee.
Good day, Mrs. Carstairs.
Goodbye. Oh, she's gone. You know, I think that's pretty pathetic. Her and old man Carstairs huddled together there all summer in them 19 rooms. Too bad. Ah, well, I'd rather be poor, wouldn't you?
No.
Me either. Hey, you think I ought to call old man Carstairs?
I haven't the slightest idea, dearie. You haven't told me yet what your deal is with him.
Oh, you'll find out in due time.
Well, I hope it isn't the kind of a deal where you'll both do time.
Now, sir, this is strictly on the up and up, Mommy. Very legitimate operation. One of my smarter business ventures, I might say.
Well, now, don't forget the time you put $300 in that nursery because you like children. And then found out you own 92 walnut trees.
Well, we had all the walnuts we could eat, didn't we?
We never had any walnuts.
Well, that's all we could eat. Neither of us likes walnuts. Outside of that...
Hello, folks.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Hi, Junior. You'll excuse me if I have to duck out on short notice. Got a big deal pending with old man Carstairs.
Oh, well, I'll be seeing him in just a few minutes at the Chamber of Commerce. I've got to get right down there and put on my makeup.
Your makeup?
Yes, I'm acting secretary.
Oh, Waxy, that's awful.
I'm giving the members a short talk on war bonds.
But what can you tell them that they don't know about war bonds, Mr. Wilcox?
Well, nothing, maybe, but I can repeat a few things that they might have forgotten, like the fact that victory in Europe is just the seventh inning stretch, and that we've got to stay in there and pitch to get our men home from the bases in the Pacific. I can emphasize the fact that every bond they buy in this seventh war loan is a Japanese obituary, and that it's no extravagance when our country has money to burn Tokyo.
You going to say anything about when you buy a war bond, you're not doing anybody a favor but yourself, Junior?
Or about how every extra bond you buy is another peg to hold down inflation?
No, I'll cover that all right, but it can't be said too often that war bonds buy weapons. And the best investment in the world right now is the common stock of an American rifle. Well, I got to get going. See you later, folks.
Maybe I should have went with him and seen old Carstairs down at the Chamber of Commerce.
That would be against your policy of playing hard to get, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it good business to make the small man come to see the big man?
Yeah, you're right, Molly. After all, he don't know how much money we got. For all he knows, we might be multimillionaires, just like simple living.
Sure.
Yeah.
We gave up our private yacht because the smell of brass polish makes you sneeze.
Yeah. Because, hey, wait a minute. Does Johnson make a brass polish?
Oh, my goodness, I don't know.
Well, take it easy till we find out. We're liable to wisecrack ourselves right into the cornflake business or something. Come in.
Oh, hello, Dr. Gamble.
Hello, Molly.
Hello, eager weasel.
The expression is eager beaver, Doctor.
I know, but a beaver has a flat tail.
Touché, McGee.
Touché, I'll touché him riding one right on his big fat proboscis. Proboscis means nose, doesn't it, Doctor?
It's proboscis, my boy. The C is silent, like a husband in a millinery shop. It's from the Latin pro and the Greek boscane, to feed, and properly used refers to the trunk of an elephant. It is not a correct reference to the human schnozola or beezer, except in a humorous context.
Heavenly days, Doctor. You're a regular walking encyclopedia.
You said it, sister. He walks exactly like an encyclopedia. A thick one with stiff covers. 6 volumes.
You hurt me, my dear fellow.
Well?
If I am slightly muscle-bound, it's because I... I was a well-known athlete in college.
Yeah, I hear you got caught in some pretty low dives when you were on the swimming team.
Oh, were you really a great athlete, Doctor?
I was a lousy athlete, but I was well-known. I held the record for the shot put at one time, however.
The shot put, eh? What'd you use, BBs?
Being somewhat of a psychologist, Gopher Puss, I realize that your scoffing attitude is due to a subconscious realization of your own physical shortcomings.
Oh, you're not saying that just because you admire me.
Oh, yes, I am. In fact, you were probably turned down by the track coach for having two left feet.
Oh, well, now listen, he made the basketball team, Doctor.
With two left feet? A likely story. Why, he hasn't dribbled with any success since he was 6 months old. And furthermore, he couldn't shoot a basket with a Tommy gun.
Now, just a darn minute, you big iodine artist. Who was it in the last quarter of the big football game between Peoria and Joliet in 1911 that saved the game by running 210 yards for a touchdown?
210 yards?
Yeah.
Where were you playing, in the Mojave Desert?
He had to run around the field twice, Doctor.
Yeah, I had mud in my eyes and couldn't see where I was going. Remember that, Molly?
Oh, I do indeed. I do indeed, dearie. The rest of the team must have had mud in their eyes, too.
Hmm?
They carried the goalposts out on their shoulders and tried to make a bonfire out of McGee.
Yes, and everybody said I was... Oh, my gosh. My call. I'll see you later, Doc.
Oh, I'm not going. I wouldn't miss a word of any phone call that gets you this excited. Go ahead, answer it.
This is a personal call,
Go on,
Doc.
Yeah.
Go on, beat it. Go home.
It's a business matter,
yeah.
Doctor.
Well, I hope he doesn't mumble. I don't want to miss any of it.
Oh, my.
Gee whiz, Doc.
Go on,
I would...
go on, answer the phone. Hurry up.
Oh,
go
sure.
On. I'm listening.
Hello? Oh, hello there, Carstairs. Yes. Huh? No, I've been busy all day with them Argentina municipal bond issues. Yeah. Incidentally, keep your eye on international soybean, Carstairs. There's something going on there. Huh? Yeah. Though the Morgan crowd might give us a little trouble.
Isn't this nauseating?
Hush, Doctor, hush.
What say, Carstairs? Yeah, I thought it all over. I'm game to go through with my end of it. Meet me where? Under the third lamppost west of 14th. Oak.
Heavenly days, this is exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, in a dull sort of way.
I'll be there on the dot, Carstairs. I'll be wearing a buttonhole in my carnation and my eyes pulled down over my hat. You whistle three times in a low voice, see? And I'll blink my flashlight twice. Yeah. Now, look, Carstairs, take it easy. We don't want any slip.
My goodness, McGee, why all the mystery about your deal with Mr. Carstairs?
Old man Carstairs don't often handle deals personal, see? He usually sends an adversary to act for him.
You mean he sends an emissary?
Why do I? An emissary is where soldiers buy chocolate bars and stuff at an army camp.
That's a commissary.
I thought a commissary was a camel with two humps.
You're thinking of a dromedary.
Go on, dromedaries are dates. I've eaten tons of them.
It's just a brand of dates.
Well, then what's an adversary?
An enemy.
That's ridiculous. Why should Carstairs send an enemy to see me?
I didn't say that, sweetheart. You said it.
Well, I better be careful, that's all. I'm liable to blow this whole thing higher than a kite. Well, I gotta be off any minute now. How do I look?
All right, but you should have a hanky peeking out of your breast pocket. It'll look dressier.
Where is they one?
The laundry's just back. Beulah'll give you one. Oh, Beulah! Beulah! Somebody bowl for Beulah?
Yeah, you're talking about a fresh hanky for Mr. McGee. Yeah, he is. One with your initials on, too.
Well, thanks, Beulah.
What's so funny about a handkerchief with his initials on it, Beulah?
Oh, excuse me, ma'am, but I hardly like to say.
Oh, come on, Beulah, what's the joke? I think these initials are pretty handsome. A little on the big side, but nice.
Well, sir, you see... When the lottery man handed me that hanky, he looked at the initials, FM, and he said, he sees me. He sees.
Well, Beulah, what did he say?
He said, give this to the little field mouse. That's what he said.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's very funny. Just for that crack, I got a good notion to change laundries.
You better not, sir. You'll be biting off your pillowcases to spite your shirt. Well, the other laundries ain't take no new clients.
Just laugh it off, McGee. And you better be going if you're meeting Mr. Carstairs.
My goodness, Miss McGee. You got a date to meet Mr. Carstairs? You sure is traveling in rich company.
Oh, his dough don't impress me any, Beulah. Money ain't everything.
What ain't it?
I think character is more important than money, Beulah.
Maybe, ma'am, but with a little cold cash, I could be an awful hot character.
Well, now, don't tell anybody about me having a deal with Carstairs, Beulah. It's little things like that that affect the whole financial structure.
No, sir, I know how it is. I really do. Because I lost everything in a crash in 1929.
What kind of stocks did you have, Beulah?
Lyle, ma'am, with pot and top size 9.
She said stocks, Beulah, not socks.
Oh, well. Well, I was mostly in electric futilities.
Utilities, Beulah. Futility means hopeless.
You said it, ma'am.
Well, anyway, now, not a word about this to anybody, Beulah. This is strictly hush-hush. If Wall Street knew I was operating with Carstairs, the English pound would drop to 3 ounces.
It can't drop to 3 ounces because it's 6... Oh, look here. 60. I love that man.
Well, here I go, laughing and scratching.
Good luck with your deal, dearie.
Ah, this one can't miss, Tootsie. I know what I'm doing this time. I'll tell you all about it when I get back.
Wait a minute. You didn't kiss me goodbye.
Huh? Oh, goodbye. Oh, had a little moth, and his name was Ernie. Flew through a flame, and Ernie Bernie. Now, let me see. Third lamppost, he says. 1, 2. Ah, this is it. Carstairs?
Yeah, is that you, McGee?
Yeah.
Didn't know you in that turtleneck sweater. Thought you were a turtle.
You sure you weren't followed, Carstairs?
Nobody could follow me, McGee. Swung through the branches of the trees for 3 blocks.
Smart tactics, Carstairs. That's the kind of thinking I like to find in men I work with.
Yeah.
You bring that thing?
Yeah. Have the money?
Right here. $75. Countrified check.
You mean certified?
Countrified. I got it at the Farmers National.
Oh.
Now look, Carstairs. You guarantee I'll eventually get a definite $100 for this?
Why, certainly. That's a war bond, man. Surest investment in the world. Here, take it.
Thanks.
Believe me, I'd never have delivered it personally if I weren't chairman of the committee and want to be sure I get over my quota. Thanks very much, McGee.
That's okay, Carsty. Glad to do business with you. See you again.
Not necessarily.
What a deal. What a deal. $100 for 75. And guaranteed, too. By the government. Yes, sir. Smartest investment I ever made. How about you, folks?
You know, there's no fun driving a dull, dingy-looking car. And there's no need to when you can still get Johnson's Car New. Ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce Mr. Charles Buckmeyer, aide to the National Commander of the Catholic War Veterans. Mr. Buckmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Wilcox. Ladies and gentlemen, by the power vested in me by the National Commander, McCaffrey, and as past commander of the Los Angeles Post, I am happy to present the annual National Commander's citation to Fribber McGee and Molly. The citation reads, "To the beloved Fribber McGee and Molly of America's Millions, in recognition of their successful efforts to lighten the burdens of American people in a time of great ordeal, through understanding and clean comedy, and in acknowledgement of their accomplishment in portraying the American home through gentle humor and true dignity as a great source of our national strength."
Thank you, Mr. Buckmeyer.
Thank you very much. We're very proud to accept this citation.
And we're sorry we couldn't be in New York tomorrow night to receive it at the National Military Pageant.
Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson Wax Finishes for Home and Industry, inviting you all to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Fibber McGee and Molly, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 19th of June, 1945 on NBC. This is an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up next, the Bob Hope Program, an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast, meaning no commercials, of a program normally called The Pepsodin Show, the toothpaste that sponsored Bob's program in the States. And I make that distinction because Bob Hope was among the entertainers who clocked the most miles overseas entertaining the troops during World War II at Army bases across the world. It was actually a week before this episode that Bob Hope broadcast his show not from an Army base for the first time since the end of the war. This episode from December 11, 1945.
Bob Hope and his special guest, Herbert Marshall.
It's only paper moon, sailing over a cardboard sea. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Yes, it's only a canvas sky, hanging over a muslin tree. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Now your love, it's a honky-tonk parade. Without your love, it's a melody played in a penny arcade. It's a Barnum and Bailey world, just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. It's a melody played in a penny arcade. It's the Barnum and Bailey world, just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
Well, here I am in Phoenix, Arizona. Phoenix is located in the southern part of the state, except on windy days. And this is a great city. You know, Crosby owns a string of filling stations in this state. You can always tell him the Flying Red Horse is leaning against a post. But this is really the Old West. The minute we hit town, there was a quick exchange of shots. The musicians had found the bar. We had a nice trip to Arizona. We came up by bus. It's cheaper than surgery. It was a nice bus. You know those big greyhounds? Well, this one looked like it had refused to eat its red heart. No use talking. I got to stop buying jokes from my butcher. I won't say the bus was old, but a few miles this side of the border, it stopped, and General Custer got off and said, "Which way did they go?" And I won't say it's crowded on those buses, but it's the only time I ever rode in a bus where the driver had to steer it by running along outside and kicking the front wheel. Everybody was so jammed in when we got off. Skinny Ennis was wearing Colonna's mustache. Colonna was walking with my feet, and I was wearing Francis Langford's false eyelashes. And boy, what a reckless driver. The speedometer didn't bother to register the speed. It just sat there shrugging its needle. They had those new reclining seats. You know, you just lean back, push a button, and the next thing you know, the guy in back of you is in front of you. Any questions? But I think I tilted my seat back a little too far. A little boy was sitting in back of me, and he kept dropping jelly beans down my nose. And his father wouldn't let me keep them. You know, there's a lot of petrified forests in Arizona. This is the only place in the country where the woodpeckers lay pebbles. And they're really proud of their health record here. In fact, the last time Sinatra wanted to come down here, the Chamber of Commerce met him at the border and stamped his forehead tourist before they'd let him in. It's so healthy around here, the newspapers don't have obituary columns. If someone dies here, they just list them under the lost and not likely to be found ads. I don't know what they think of skinny Ennis around here. But a couple of guys took a look at him today, and one said to the other, "Listen, Joe, we'll have to quit burying the bodies in that loose sand." Take it, Joe. Here comes Skinny Ennis.
Just a little fond affection is all I'm thinking of. I've been in heaven since the day I found you. It's really heaven with my arms around you. Just a little fond affection cheers me when I'm feeling blue. Just a little love, a little affection, dear, from you. Just a little fond affection cheers me when I'm feeling blue. Just a little love, a little affection, dear, with you.
That was Skinny Ennis, the poor man's Gregory Reck. Yes, sir. The only man I know makes a living out of asthma. Well, how do you like Arizona, Skin?
Oh, it's swell, Bob, but they've sure got strict agricultural laws there. Almost didn't get across the border.
What do you mean?
Well, I was wearing a green sweater, and they thought I was an asparagus tip.
Yes. Skin, you should have stuck your chest out.
Man, I did. They won't let any avocados in either.
Now that you're in Arizona, why don't you buy yourself some Western garb?
I did, Bob. The first thing when we arrived, I went out and bought myself a 10-gallon hat.
Skin, you're going to wear a 10-gallon hat?
Man, who said anything about wearing it? I'm going to move into it.
Yes, sir. And you can take sun baths on the brim.
Hello, Bob. Hi, Skin.
Well, Francis Langford, ladies and gentlemen. There you go.
This is really the West, isn't it, Bob?
Yes, Sir Francis. This is the West where men are men and the women are women, and they haven't figured out a way to put a tax on it yet.
But it really is wonderful here, isn't it, Bob?
Oh, I don't know.
What's the matter? Couldn't you get a date?
What do you mean? I had a date, but I gave her the brush. The papoose on her back kept picking my pocket.
Bob, what happened to you after we left the station? You disappeared.
Well, I went up to the Indian reservation.
Really? How'd you make out? Did you sell all your blankets?
Yes. Yes, but the moccasins didn't go over very good. I'll have to use a finer needle on my bead work. But I did all right selling those victory bonds here in Phoenix this afternoon.
Yes, I saw you talking to that redhead, but I didn't think much of your salesmanship.
Why, I was just explaining about the 2%.
Yes, but you were showing the wrong kind of interest.
Well, why not? I haven't reached maturity yet. Mentally. Thought I'd get that in there before you did.
By the way, Bob, is Professor Colonna here with us in Arizona?
Yes, Francis. I sent the professor out to take some snapshots of the Grand Canyon.
The Grand Canyon?
Yeah, that's where Superman forgot to replace a divot. I'll get it. Hello?
Listen, when Bob Hope comes in, tell him Professor Colonna's sick in bed with a temperature of 120.
A temperature of 120? No man in his right mind would believe that.
Well, let's not quibble about the obvious. This story is designed for Bob Hope.
Professor, this is Bob Hope.
Well, I was getting tired of radio anyway.
Well, Colonna, are you at the Grand Canyon?
Yes, but I can't see it very well.
Can't see the canyon? How come?
Well, it's way down at the bottom of a big hole in the ground.
Colonna, get busy and take some pictures of that country, will you?
1 minute, Hope. I think I have a beautiful shot. A real Hopi Pinto pony.
A real Hopi Pinto pony? What was that?
Pinto just had a pinto. I'll see how this picture comes out, Hope, and call you back. Roger, over and out.
Boy, that Colonna would make a great cowboy. He carries his own wide open spaces with him in his head.
Do you think you'd like to be a cowboy out here, Bob?
Not me, Francis. Those longhorns look dangerous. How'd they ever get such longhorns anyway?
I really don't know, but don't brood about it, Bob. Yours has a much cuter twist in it.
Well, it saves buying a shoehorn, anyway. Hello?
Hello, Hope. Say, tell me, Hope, do California slugs work in Arizona telephones?
Yes, they do, Colonna.
See, operator, there's your man.
Colonna, are you still at the Grand Canyon?
Yes, and I can't understand it, Hope. They only charge a quarter to look at it. For a hole that big, they ought to get at least a dollar.
Well, how do you figure that out, Colonna?
Well, I get 50 cents for the one in my head.
You mean you actually charge people 50 cents to look in the hole in your head?
Well, that's just a look. If they want to take a goldfish home with them, it costs them an extra quarter. Isn't that right, honey?
Colonna, have you got a girl with you there?
Well, yes, I have. Hope she's lovely. Her hair is just like the setting sun. Her eyes sparkle like the stars at night. And her voice, her voice.
Put her on the phone. This I gotta hear.
Hello there.
Well, you can't have everything.
Say, come again. I think a Boy Scout was rubbing those wires together.
Hello, how are you, Mr. Hope?
I found her here at the Grand Canyon.
Be more specific, Colonna. Under which rock? Colonna, come over right away and bring that girl with you. I gotta see that.
Well, we're on our way, Hope. Shortcut.
Well, Colonna, introduce me to your girlfriend.
Hope, this is Raspy.
Yes, they named me after Rasputin.
Believe me, the resemblance doesn't end there. Say, did you always have that voice, or did you forget to close your mouth during an Arizona sandstorm?
Well, anyway, the professor likes me.
Of course, Hope, we get along very well.
You do?
Yes, the frog in her throat likes to jump through my mustache.
Why, Professor, how can you say that? I have a lovely voice.
Oh, do you sing?
Sing? Listen to this. Kiss me once and kiss me twice. It's been a long, long time. It's been a long, long time. It's been a long, long...
Shortened it for her, didn't I?
Thank you.
oak will-o'-the-wisp. And in its song there is sadness because there's no you. The lonely autumn trees, how softly they're sighing, for summer is dying. They know that in my heart there's no gladness because there's no you. The park that we walked in, the garden we talked in, how lonesome they seem in the fall. The stormy clouds hover and falling leaves cover our favorite nook in the wall. In spring we'll meet again. We'll kiss and recapture the summertime rapture we knew. And from that day nevermore will I say there's no you. The park that we walked in, the garden we talked in, how lonesome they seem in the fall. The stormy clouds hover and falling leaves cover our favorite nook in the wall. In spring we'll meet again. Summertime rapture we knew, and from that day nevermore will I say there's no you.
It's a great pleasure to present a charming British gentleman who's lent his suave touch to many a successful picture and has done likewise with many of our programs. Here he is, Herbert Marshall.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And there was quite a build-up you gave me there, Bob.
Oh, I always do that. It gives the show class. Well, Bart, are you enjoying your stay here in Arizona as much as we are?
Yes, and you should take advantage of it, Bob. You know, you're in pretty bad condition.
What do you mean, bad condition?
Well, just look at those circles under your eyes.
Are they bad?
Bad. Your nose looks like it's playing shuffleboard.
Bart, those aren't circles under my eyes. It's that cheap mascara I've been using. But you're looking great, Bart.
Well, yes, I've been putting a lot of time on my dude ranch down here.
By the way, thanks for letting me stay at your ranch.
Oh, it's nothing, Bob.
Well, I appreciate it a lot. How did you come to think of inviting me out to your place?
Oh, it occurred to me the other morning, Bob, when I looked out my window and saw your trailer parked in the yard.
Well, I have to have some place to carry my sample cases. But, Bart, your ranch isn't really typical. I could tell it was owned by an Englishman.
How, Bob?
I milked one of the cows and got a bucket full of orange Pekoe. But I certainly enjoyed staying at your place, Bart. Everything is so informal. I love going downstairs in the morning and having breakfast before I get dressed.
Yes, I meant to speak to you about that, Bob. Don't you think that's a little too informal?
How do you mean too informal? I always have a bathrobe when I come downstairs.
Yes, I know you do, Bob, but don't you think you should wear it?
Are you kidding? If I do that, I can't take it back to Goldwater's. Bob will hit me with a mashie or something. Where are we? But that ranch life is wonderful. Every morning at 6 o'clock, I sat down at the breakfast table.
Yes, and every morning at 10 o'clock, you got up from the breakfast table.
Well, I like to take a walk before lunch, you know what I mean?
And incidentally, Bob, your table manners are awful.
Oh, you shouldn't get mad, Bart. I was only eating cowboy style.
Yes, but you still use cutlery. You don't take off your spur and use it as a fork, you know?
I'm sorry, Herb, but I tried being like the other cowboys. I even tried rolling a cigarette with one hand.
How did it turn out?
Perfect, but I couldn't smoke it.
Why not?
I couldn't get my finger out. Incidentally, Bart, I didn't get much sleep there at night with all that howling.
Well, it's your own fault, Bob. You could have slept.
What do you mean?
Well, those are coyotes. You're not supposed to howl back.
Gee, you mean I haven't got a date tomorrow night after all? But, Bart, you're getting to be a regular cowboy now, aren't you?
Yep. I remember just last week, my foreman, Tex, and I were out on the range.
Hey, Bart.
I want to drink my Java from an old tin pan while the moon is shining high. I want to hear the call of the whippoorwill. I want to hear those coyotes cry.
All this city life
and these
city ways
are driving me insane.
Oh, won't you take me back?
I want to go back. Back on the Texas plains. We mean Arizona. Ha, 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 ha. Those Arizona plains.
Well, come on, Tex. Let's go look over the herd.
Okay, partner, what'll it be this time? The Biltmore or the Wigwam Inn? No, on second thought, let's knock off a cactus sandwich. I need the roughage.
Say, you're really a rootin' tootin' cowboy, ain't you, Tex?
Sure am. It's in my blood. Runs in my family.
You mean your father was a cowboy, too?
No, he was a chorus boy in Oklahoma. He was a chorus boy in Oklahoma. Might as well let the balcony here, too, huh? It's a shame you ain't as tough as I am. I hear you got thrown out of the saloon last night. What was you doing?
Chewing tobacco.
They threw you out for chewing tobacco?
Yeah. I tried to blow a smoke ring.
Well, you should take me with you when you go into those places. You ought to try it anyway. You know, Two Gun, I'm the toughest cowboy in these here parts.
You're the toughest cowboy in these parts? Then how come you can't ride a horse?
That ain't the part I'm tough in. I'm tall in the saddle till my calluses break. Yes, I.
Come on, Tex. Let's go check on the herd.
I'm right with you.
Wait a minute. There's some rustling going around here.
Rustling? Can't understand that, Two Gun. I ain't wearing my taffeta ones today.
I ain't kidding, Tex. Somebody stole one of my cows and cut it up into steaks.
No kidding.
The fellow who did this is a bold, desperate rustler.
How do you know he's a bold, desperate rustler?
Well, look at the message he left. Nuts to you, spelled out in Philly Minions.
Well.
What are we waiting for, Tex? Which way do the rustlers go?
I don't know, but never mind. We'll just follow my nose.
I couldn't. The altitude would kill me. Come on, Tex. The trail goes this way. Let's follow it.
Hey, Two Gun, I'm getting tired. Let's stop and wait for the horses.
Here they come. Let's get on. You have a mighty funny way of riding a horse, Tex.
Well, it may look funny, Two Gun, but it's sure nice and shady under here. I wonder which way them rustlers went.
Look, Tex, them rustle cattle is smart. They left a trail of milk.
Yeah, bright little squirts, weren't they? Say, Two Gun, we must be pretty close to the rustler now.
Too close.
Put up your hands. Reach.
Okay. I got my hands up.
Reach higher. Higher.
I can't reach any higher. My feet are off the ground now.
It's a gal, Tex. Gee, I wish my hair was combed. Thanks.
So you're the rustler, huh?
Yes, Cactus Sue. I'll steal anything that walks on all fours.
Two Gun, get up off your knees.
Yeah, I got her. I'm going to slip the cuffs on her.
Watch out, Tex. She's toting 38s.
Yeah, and she's got guns, too.
don't look like rough, tough cowboys to me.
We don't, huh? Well, gal, you've heard of the James brothers, haven't you?
Yes.
Well, meet the Dolly sisters. Come on, we're taking you in, sister.
Now, don't make any false moves, boys. I'm a pistol-packing mama. Watch that pistol.
Yeah, and I'm watching that packing, too. But I ain't afraid of no rustler. I'll shoot it out with you.
Tex, you don't know what you're doing. This is Cactus Sue, the best shot in the West.
I ain't afraid of her. I'm a pretty good shot myself. See that bird in that tree? Looks pretty up there, don't he?
Tell you what, ma'am. Tell you what, I'm a sport. I'll let you go if you give me a kiss.
Okay, it's a deal. Here.
Well, how was it, Tex?
I think I found something to replace the branding iron.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Herbert Marshall, for another fine job.
The Bob Hope Program, on Tuned to Yesterday, from the 11th of December, 1945. First heard on NBC, that was an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast. Wrapping up this hour of comedy, on Tuned to Yesterday, be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. It's been a pleasure.